Even in today's woke society, there remains a stigma to being a psychosexual sadist. If you get sexual pleasure from causing intense pain to people that you are incapable of feeling empathy for, you need a place to relax and mingle with like-minded people. Well, look no further than Only Sadists, the sadist-only S&M club. At Only Sadists, you can compare notes on how to humiliate, manipulate, and maim your sex slaves with other local sadists. Just make sure not to practice on the other patrons. They're not into that. Come on down to Sadists Only. It's the S&M club without the M.
Hello and welcome to Horror Movie Talk.
An opinionated and accidentally funny horror movie review show. Go.
Through the scraggly woods.
He had no face!
Horror!
Sabrina, don't just stare at it, eat it.
New theatrical releases always get priority.
But we also review older horror movies, both good and horrible.
Wow, that didn't sound good.
Hello.
Hey guys, how's everybody doing out there in Radio Land? You know, I was thinking about that ad. If the other patrons aren't into it, isn't that kind of a just an added bonus to the sadist?
Yeah, but they won't stand for that shit. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that club or anything like that. I haven't been there yet, but.
Well, hello and welcome. My name is Bryce Hansen. I'm the dangerous one your mother warned you about. And with me, as always, is
Professor David Day. I am the foremost expert in scare no-nos.
Before we get started, just want to plug our website, horrormovietalk.com. There you'll find links to all our social media. If you're new to the podcast, we post new episodes every Wednesday. We've been doing it for nearly
about two years.
About 2 years now. So like 2 weeks away from 2 years.
Yeah.
And we haven't missed a week.
It's been, and at this point, I really can't imagine my life without it.
Uh-huh. So please subscribe. If you have an Apple product, it would really help us out if you left a rating on Apple Podcasts. We're trying to get up to 200. We're at 150 last time I checked. So do that if you're listening on a iPhone or iPad right now. We got a great show today. We're going to be talking about the classic Clive Barker's original
The Land Before Time.
Oh no, the green stars. we're going to talk about Hellraiser.
Yeah, dude. This movie pretty stands up really well to the test of time.
Yeah.
Like, better than any of the slashers of the 80s, it seems like to me.
Yeah, because this is definitely... It's not really a slasher.
It's not really a slasher, no. It's
like within that realm.
Yeah.
Because, like, you think of what are the classic, like, 80s staple, like, franchises... And Hellraiser's kind of an afterthought, mostly because the rest of the movies apparently are god-awful. But
no, 2 is good. 2's legit.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
But Hellraiser is, like, really great. In terms of, like, special effects, like the makeup effects.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I mean, this stands up against, like, The Thing as one of the most iconic, like... stretches of special effects.
Yeah, the practical effects in this are second to none. Like, they're... And not only that, truly, just like... I'm glad that you made the comparison to The Thing, because very disturbing, just in that same vein.
Yeah. So we're going to start out by giving a brief review and our score for the movie. We score on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being a miserable dredge, where it makes you angry that you're watching it, 5 being an average film that hits all the expected marks, and 10 being so good it transcends genre boundaries. After we give our score, we'll get into spoilers and take a deeper dive into what we liked and hated about the film. And then later on, we'll be playing a new game called Hellraiser versus Hellraiser.
It sounds like just a game that we've done before, just with a new name.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty much. No, this is completely new. We're breaking new ground.
Breaking new ground.
And then we'll go over, it came from social media, we'll read the happenings of the Facebook, the Insta, the Twitter, the, you know.
Patreon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me just say, Patreon is, it's like a weird, like, I'm being unironic. I'm just being totally serious right now. That platform is so wonderful. Like some of our navigation issue, there are a few navigation issues on the creator end, but man, just clean and to the point, and it seems like you can build a really nice community within Patreon.
Well, I think the best part of Patreon is that it's like all the super fans.
Yeah.
They all really want to be engaged, and they engage with us and each other.
Yeah.
So it's really nice.
I love it.
We'll plug Patreon later. Let's stop talking about
Patreon.
Okay,
sorry.
Don't want to be too greedy. Please give us money. We rewatched Hellraiser this week, and I feel sticky. Here is the trailer.
I have seen the future of horror. His name is Clive Barker.
No, thank you.
Lots of suffering sounds. Mm-hmm. And sounds like an overdubbed porno.
Yeah. It'd be a good candidate for horror or porno.
I've pulled clips from Hellraiser for horror or porno
before. Oh, yeah?
Well, just wait for next week when we got horror or porno coming at you.
Mm-hmm. Hellraiser can be found streaming on Shudder or Tubi.
Or Tubi.
Or Pluto, which is a new one I've never heard of. So Tubi and Pluto are one of those ad-supported ones that you can stream.
I can't remember where I watched it, but I don't feel like I checked Shudder, so I probably,
you paid for it.
I think I did. I'm looking at my orders on Amazon, and I didn't pay for it on Amazon, so I don't know where I could have possibly.
Google or YouTube or something.
No, I didn't do that. Anyway, sorry.
Hellraiser is about a
psychosexual sadist
named Frank that finds a personal Pandora's box that he thinks will get him everything he's ever wanted in life. Turns out he was mistaken, and he didn't end up liking eternal pain.
Homer, this just in, Homer Simpson sleeps in sex tent he believes gives him sexual powers.
When his ex-lover Julia...
Good morning, Julia.
and her husband, Frank's...
Do it again.
When his ex-lover, Julia...
Good morning, Julia.
And her husband and Frank's cuckold brother arrive in the house that Frank held his ritual in, they inadvertently help Frank begin resurrecting himself. When a mostly goo Frank is discovered by Julia... He recruits her to bring sacrificial singles in their area so that he can become a real boy.
Shut the fuck up.
They're run on sentences, but they're gold, right?
Yeah.
The only thing standing in their way is Frank's niece and the hell demon Cenobites that seek to recapture him. This film is Clive Barker's best film. I looked at his filmography and, like, I don't think there was anything that was even close to touching this. I haven't seen a lot of them, but
Candyman.
I mean, Candyman was really good, but I feel this one's better.
I don't disagree with that. Yeah, I think this is better, but not far and away.
Right. Yeah, Candyman is great.
Right.
I actually don't remember what I gave Candyman now.
I don't either, but I mean, it's basically a Dracula retelling, right? So
right.
You can't really go wrong with like repackaging Dracula.
Man.
Good Lord.
It's a unique mix of family dysfunction, sex, sadism, and gore.
A little taste.
At times it feels like a 50s melodrama, other times like a nightmare, and sometimes like a snuff film. The tone set is really hard to put a finger on, but it is definitely dark and icky.
Yeah, dark and icky.
Mm-hmm. The surreal imagery and goopy special effects are really the best parts of the film. The acting is not particularly great, but the imagery and themes of the film overwhelm any shortcomings it has. I mean, it's...
Yeah, do you have that drop of my brand? The acting is kind of...
My brand!
It's kind of my brand. It's it's very soap opera-y feeling with a different filter thrown over the top, but still.
Do you know? I mean, I haven't watched the movie, but I've seen the Broadway musical of Sunset Boulevard. Are you aware of what that movie is about?
No.
There's this character called Norma Desmond, which is an aging like. Silver screen era actress.
Okay.
That's washed up and she hasn't been in movies for a long time. And like a guy stumbles across her and she's like basically kind of a crazy old lady that is delusional.
Yeah.
Julia in this movie, like a lot of the acting is very, very Norma Desmond, just like way over the top melodrama.
Yeah. It does. It's, I mean, this was 1987.
Yeah.
Okay, Hellraiser's 1987, and you'll notice that certainly in the 70s and even in the late 80s, in the early 80s, there's a decent amount of vaudevillian kind of holdovers that and acting even up till 87, 88 with Evil Dead, with Bruce Campbell kind of like but that's ironic. Like Bruce Campbell doing it is kind of ironic. In this movie, it still does feel a little vaudevillian,
It's unironic. The part that proves this point is when she's just on the banister looking down at Frank's niece. I can't even remember what the main character's name in this movie is. The girl.
Yeah.
Girl. Anyways, she's looking at girl and she's standing there for like seven Mississippi wordlessly, just glaring. And then she kind of slinks backwards into an open door.
Right.
It's very melodramatic, very like 40s
and yet
Dracula.
It still kind of weirdly, it kind of works. If you juxtapose that with other movies of the time, you know, obviously there's the ironic redoing of that vaudevillian technique with Evil Dead 2 with Bruce Campbell. And then if you compare it to like a slasher of, I think roughly that same year, I think 88 was when Child's Play came out. Child's Play was deadly goddamn serious with the acting, very juxtaposed against this. And but yet they still kind of inhabit the same space of seriousness, regardless of the style of acting they choose. They still both kind of sit together in this like weird kind of grossness.
Yeah, I mean the melodrama and like the overacting are just weird. Kind of artificial.
What's the matter with you?
I'm belching fool. I mean, it's in the intro. It's part of.
I know. I went to
my brand.
But yeah, I mean, all that melodrama is really. I mean, it's sold just by the overall tone.
Yeah.
Of the movie, and it's what the kids today would call big mood.
Very nice.
All right. So. What score do you give Hellraiser?
This is a tough one.
I mean, there's a case that could be made for 10.
There is a case that could be made for 10. I'm not that case. I won't make that case.
Right.
It's... I feel like there's a thing that happens with this movie that where it tries, and for that I respect
right.
it. It tries on a number of different levels to obfuscate the normal recipe, right? The normal recipe, if you were to show me this, show me the cover of this movie and tell me it came out in 1987 and I knew nothing about it, I would go, oh, okay. Well, that guy's the bad guy, the guy with the pins in his head.
Uh-huh.
And he's going to chase all these other people around until they're all dead. And he's going to do it somehow, and it's going to be gross. And that's not...
Yeah, it's not that at all.
That's not that at all. In fact, there's a lot of intricacy to the story. There's a lot of intrigue and interesting things that go on in the story. But it's, I mean, you know, Citizen Kane, it ain't. But there's a lot of things that work for it. The practical effects are second to none. Like, this is the best practical effects you will ever see outside of a Jim Henson movie. But it
holds
movie.
Up so well in terms of like just, I mean, the resurrection of Frank just throughout the whole film is just so effective.
There's also a thing that's going on in my head where we've been so spoiled by this kind of shutdown thing where all the theaters are shut down. So all we've been doing is reviewing banger after banger, like great movie after great movie. So I'm kind of getting tired of giving high scores.
Right.
But I shouldn't let that clog my vision. I think to be fair, the amount of excitement I have about this movie is around an 8.
Yeah.
I'm not like amped up about this movie. I wouldn't highly recommend it to friends or anything. But if someone were to say, I really like the special effects in The Thing. Hellraiser. Yeah, yeah. Or if they were like, I really want a non-stereotypical horror movie. Hellraiser, obviously.
Right. Or I really want a horror movie that focuses on a
psychosexual sadist.
Right. Obviously, then it's Hellraiser. I'll tell you, the thing that I've been noticing about, I'm not a big Clive Barker guy. I've never watched much of his stuff at all, with the exception of Hellraiser. But I'm noticing a through line in all of his work, which is all of it is way more sexual than anything else in horror.
Yeah.
Way, way, way more sexual. And that adds an additional layer of taboo, kind of grittiness, kind of discomfort.
Yeah.
Which is, I appreciate.
Yeah, you definitely, I mean, this film is very transparent in that you get a good sense of what Clive Barker's kink is, you know. But, I mean, the other thing I was noticing about this movie, well, I'll save that till spoilers.
What do you think?
Score, yeah, I think it's really great, and it holds up real well in terms of just rewatchability. And if you were to give this to someone today that knows nothing about Hellraiser, they will walk away with something like Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, just like they were not prepared for that.
It would impress them.
There's lots of moments like that. Like, I was not prepared for this.
Yeah.
From anything that I've ever seen before.
Yeah. There are parts of this that are legitimately toe curling, scary, and gross.
Yeah. And how it handles it. That's the other thing is that the gore and the just the effects, there's plenty of movies that go that far.
Yeah.
Now and in like even the 2000s and stuff but the difference is like they focus on the effect for effect's sake, you know, and And this one just really takes it seriously for some. I don't know how to put it, like, exactly well, but I mean,
it's like the difference between, and this is an analogy, so it won't do so well, but it's like the difference between Scream and other slashers.
Yeah,
Scream, you get this visceral, like, the knife is fucking serious.
Right.
It's really serious. It feels real.
Yeah.
Because, and they focus on it getting closer and pushing into your skin. Yeah. And by virtue of that, it's much more disturbing than a Friday the 13th.
Right.
Because he just hacks at you and then you're dead.
Yeah.
Whereas in Scream, it's visceral. And in Hellraiser, it's visceral.
Yeah.
Everything is treated as like, oh, this poor rat that you're cutting in half, it's alive right now, and you're slicing it in half. And it's treated very seriously.
Yeah, so I think it deserves a really high score, no matter what, just from the effects and,
how
unique it is.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about some plugs. So we talked about Patreon, how great our community on Patreon is, and we love everyone there that participates and they're our own personal sponsors. New patron this last week was Breeb. Thank you so much, Bree, for joining us. There's a lot of perks that a lot of people like. The most popular is the afterpod, where we leave the mics running and talk about, existential crises.
Yeah, no
talk about fun topics like my father dying and, mental problems.
And not only that, if you sign up for Patreon, I will personally send you a thank you card with some of our stickers from our Horror Movie Talk store.
Yeah.
And so you just get those as soon as you sign up to be a Patreon member. Yeah.
It's not listed, because it was kind of a secret until now. We treat our patrons right.
Yeah,
lots of other perks. Go check it out. Patreon.com/horrormovietalk. Another way you can support us is our new shop on horrormovietalk.com.
We're going to have flying off the shelves here, people.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot more swag, but right now it's filled with stickers, our backlog of stickers that we've printed to, vandalize Vancouver, Washington, and Portland. But you can have access to these stickers and
vandalize Nashville, Memphis, and other parts of Tennessee.
So go check that out. Eventually, we're going to get t-shirts and other stuff.
I have a plug. Also, I would like to plug localasfuckapparel.com. This is an apparel company that is just about as local as you can get. They're based out of our hometown of Vancouver, Washington, and they're going to be probably handling the production of our HMT t-shirt lines. If you guys have a chance, their shirts are pretty fucking cool too. They say local AF on them. And so you can kind of rep how local you are. So if you use the code HMT at checkout, you get a 10% discount off your whole order there. Again, that's localasfuckapparel.com, and check it out, because I've bought a few pieces of their apparel, and I really like it. It's high quality shit.
Also, if you want to watch Hellraiser, it's on Shudder. You can use the code HMT at checkout for Shudder, and you'll get a 30-day free trial. So free streaming of Hellraiser for 30 days if you want it.
Yeah, Hellraiser every day for 30 days.
Mm-hmm. also, check out our resident artist, Dustin Goebel. He's a professional artist who fucks hard. He also takes commissions for artwork from his HMT fans. We've got several of the stickers that are flying off the shelves are Dustin's designs for our American Psycho episode, the Shining episode.
People and love that American Psycho one.
Color Out of Space.
Yeah, that one too.
So, yeah, check him out on Instagram at dgoebel00, DGOEBEL00 and make your artistic dreams come true. Tell them HMT sent you. Thanks again for listening. Let's get into spoilers. Oh, shit.
You're really...
Oh, I'm spoilers.
In the, go back to that one where I'm in the toilet.
This one?
Hey, Ollie. Hey, Ratty.
Hey, Ratty.
Corn for you, Ratty. Thank you.
Was that the one I just...
What did I have before?
Hello. Hello.
Hello. Okay, there we go.
Ready, rock drain.
We should have these things taken away from us for sure.
Yeah, that's another reason to tune into the Afterpod. It's all drain addict talk all the time.
I mean, I guess I'm a pretty sick guy.
So, yeah, the one thing I was gonna say about Clive Barker, the feel you get. Tell me if I'm wrong. Like, is he more successful as an author?
Oh yes. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you get that feel from him that this feels like a novel storyline because there's a lot of, like, non sequitur, a lot of surreal stuff, a lot of, like, just color that would work better as, like,
yeah,
different chapters, different
yeah
segments. So, like, the stuff with Tracy where she's seen, like, just a random hobo, you know?
Yeah.
That's, like, in a movie, it's like, what? In a book, it makes a little more sense. I don't know how to put that, but
Clive Barker is probably one of the most successful author turned screenwriter and director dudes out there. A lot of the things that I've been doing ever since Candyman, I've been doing a little bit of research on him because he's terribly interesting. He's gay. Uh-huh. He's British. He's obviously got some kinks. Yeah.
It's one of those things, like, he's like a Stephen King, but he goes a little harder.
Yeah, like, goes a little harder.
Stephen King definitely has some sexual kinks that come out in his stuff. There's just random, like, weird sex stuff.
Yeah.
That comes out in his stories. And Clive Barker is like, It's a feature
baked in. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know what it feels like. I bet this mirrors. I would guess that this mirrors their personalities very much because with Stephen King, it feels like he's working. You know, he's uh-huh. working through his work day.
Yeah,
and then he sees a picture of Ariana Grande and he's got to jerk off. You know, it just happens at some point in his day. And that comes out in his writing because it's like, oh, there's some weird sexual stuff that pops up and then it's gone.
Yeah.
But with Clive Barker, it's like sexual. Yeah. More sexual. It's like, okay.
Yeah. Like I haven't read a ton of Stephen King, but I read Cujo, which is a very simple story about a woman being trapped inside her Pinto by a rabid giant Saint Bernard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But also a big part of it is her ex jacking off over all of her items in her house.
What?
So, you know.
What?
Okay, thanks, Stephen King. but yeah, it's just like, again, it adds nothing other than like, huh, the guy's jerking off on her bed, I guess.
I wonder, I have a little. We've talked about my dad and how goofy he is.
Uh-huh.
And I've wanted to bring this up once or twice, but this, for some reason, you just reminded me of this. So I figured I'll bring it up now. Is that kosher?
Go for it.
So my brother and I have kept a log of the ridiculous things that my dad has said over the years in a shared file that we can both access over our phones. Okay, so this is things that my dad says, and there's I really don't have anything to like to intro this other than this is just fucking some and this is a actually here's a good intro. This is shit that we talk about on our Afterpod. Yeah. So things my dad says. the dog was laying there all crimped out, referring to super relaxed slash asleep. All crimped out.
Crimped out.
All crimped out. So now I say anytime anyone in my house is falling asleep, I'm like, she's all crimped out over there. he also said...
Does that have significance in arborist
world? No, it doesn't have any significance at all. It's just he's his brain can't keep up with him.
Uh-huh.
And so you get these ridiculous things like, just go burn some water. he wants you to boil water. Here's another one. She wasn't as ambidextrous as normal. This is when describing his dying mother, who was playing a cribbage game with him. Her motor functions were shutting down. She wasn't as ambidextrous as normal.
Right. Well, that's just adding amba to what he meant.
It's good coffee. I always think it's going to be laced with gas at the gas store.
What?
He gets all his coffee from gas stations.
Oh.
But he's...
I think they're just like, there's some gas station attendant that's putting in some gasoline.
Yeah, it's good coffee. I just always think it's going to be laced with gas at the gas store.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, did you try on those buckaroo pants we got you yesterday?
Buckaroo pants? What's that?
Pants.
Just pants?
Pants. Just pants.
Hmm.
Kath, can you buy me a weasel? Talking about a painting easel. My mom's name's Kathy, so he goes, Kath, can you buy me a weasel? And he expects her no. And the best part of that sentence is, after she goes, what? He gets all angry. He's like, a weasel, a weasel.
A painting weasel.
Can you get me a painting weasel?
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's some more of that on our next episode.
Yeah. Yeah, Clive Barker, it feels very authory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a feature.
So it starts out very strong. It does not wait to get into it at all or really explain anything. It's very much show, don't tell.
Yeah.
In the opening, like, what is it? It feels like even just 5 minutes.
Yeah. It's a very very Indiana Jones feeling opening.
Right.
Yeah.
So it opens up and he's like at some, you know, nameless side restaurant.
Just a little back alley market restaurant.
And, yeah. No. Somewhere in the Middle East.
Maybe. Like Turkey.
Somewhere where people are brown. All right.
Came here to be scared.
So Frank is sitting across from this merchant. And what does the merchant say? He's like, what's your pleasure?
Yeah, what's your pleasure?
And he sets down this cube. What's the Simpsons quote about a cube? Oh, your car has been compressed into a cube. Please pick up your cube or something like
your
that.
Your car has been impounded. Your car has been towed to the dump. Your car has been crushed into a cube. Please come pick up your cube.
Yeah. So, sets
and then the chuds came at me.
The, cube in front of Frank. And these are not hand models. This is like the first, like, dirty feeling you get because the hands reach out to grab the cube. And it's got the dirtiest fingernails I've ever seen captured on film.
Yeah, they're pretty gnarly. It's almost like my nails.
Yeah.
Pretty gross.
So just every opportunity they have to be off-putting and gross, they take it in this movie. So this box, it's described later in the film as it will open up doors to heaven and hell, but I think only hell. Well, you don't see a lot of heaven in any of these movies, probably. I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of them.
Yeah, I think the inclination or the unsaid suggestion there is if you're Clive Barker, it could be heaven. Hell is your heaven.
Right.
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 Because you're into that shit.
But very much it provides the most extreme of pleasure and pain, as long as you get pleasure from pain.
I'm super interested. I'm super interested to hear from anybody who has an S&M kink. If anybody out there is listening to the sound of my voice and has an S&M king, can you describe it to us? I know.
Yeah, if you hear S&M and you're like,
my brand
of kink, then contact us.
Yeah, because it's just one of those things where it's like, ow, why would that, ow, why?
See,
would-
I like Norm MacDonald has a bit, or at least just an observation about this, which is like, I mean, S&M sounds fun for the sadist. Like, yeah, anyone would have fun being the sadist. No one wants to be the masochist.
Right. Yeah. Like, and I mean, one time I went to spank a girl really hard.
Hmm.
And, yeah, and I wound up missing her ass and I hit my own balls. And
you didn't like it?
It was the worst. It ruined the whole night. It was awful.
So you're saying you wouldn't want someone in heels to step on them?
I went to be the sadist and I ended up being the masochist. And I was doubled over on the floor and...
Yeah, you experienced the whole S&M.
Yeah, it was all in one, yeah, swoop
one
of my
fell
hand.
Swoop.
One swoop of my hand.
So this box is really a Pandora's box. I mean, that's kind of what it represents, but it's not like worldwide.
The box.
It's very much a personal Pandora's box. He opens it up and, in almost an instant, he's ripped apart by hooks, and it like goes into this hellscape where there's just parts.
But it's not just a box. It's a puzzle box.
Yeah,
right?
It's a puzzle box.
Sure. It's you got like Rubik's it around a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like if you're in an escape room, one of the boxes that they give you.
Yeah, but and the weird thing is when he gets revived, it's not like he has a bunch of bad things to say about the box exactly. He's right. Like, it was pretty great.
Yeah. I mean, he was into it, but you know.
But also boo.
Yeah.
Heaven and hell.
Turns out that it's not that hard to solve this box. All you got to do is rub its nipple.
Yeah, it's a lot of tweaking.
Yeah, just caressing. You know, if you're in a nipple play, you could definitely get. Oh, Jesus!
It only
please
makes
don't.
Sense.
Please don't.
It only makes sense God. To take my shirt off during a Hellraiser review. Are you kidding me?
All right.
Is it that bad? Am I? Do I disgust you that much?
Good morning, Julia.
Good morning, Julia.
So Julia is a weird character.
Mm.
Like,
I'm up here.
Very, very, very melodramatic and, you know, pretty obviously a bitch.
Yeah. Like, she's straight out of a soap opera. She is a soap opera bad lady.
Yeah.
A bad lady from a soap opera, straight up.
Yeah. And you're not really told a ton about what's going on, but you get the feeling that there's history between Julia and the Frank guy.
Yeah.
Even though her husband's his brother. And for some reason, she definitely does not like Jesus. Like, whenever she sees, like, the religious iconography, she's like...
She's like...
Put off...
No. Stop it.
I can't help myself.
What is going on? What did you drink? Like...
Coffee.
Wow. That's incredible.
And coffee and eggs, and that's it.
Carbonated coffee?
No. Nope.
Wow.
Okay, so she's got her own thing going, and it's revealed over time, and she's really kind of the villain of this movie. If there's anyone to label the villain, it's not the Cenobites. It's not even really Frank. It's kind of Frank, but
yeah.
It's really Julia. I mean, in terms of, like, how many kills...
Yeah,
made in this movie. Julia is the leader.
Yeah, there's an argument to be made that, you know, she kind of cringes the whole time. She's like, she's conflicted about it. Frank is full on embracing the dark side. But
yeah,
but nevertheless, I mean, whether or not you liked to do it or not, you still did it. So fuck you. Like,
yeah,
she's definitely a bad guy. I kind of always viewed this movie or Hellraiser as her and Frank being the bad guys. And then strangely, I feel like the Cenobites are kind of like this neutral force.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Hey, man, we just play by the rules.
Yeah, exactly.
You open the box.
Look,
gotta take you.
We travel around the boundaries of the, you know, of experience.
It's just our job.
We just
rip apart souls.
Well, we take you on an experience. We gotta give you, look, you paid for the timeshare of torture, and now we gotta give you the experience.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Rate us 5 stars in hell.
Is it me, or does everyone in this movie look weird?
Yeah, everyone has, well, with
except
the exception
for,
of the young,
yeah,
the
with,
young lady.
What's her name? I had her name for a second.
What is her name?
Christy. Christy Cotton.
Yeah, her dad, mm-hmm. Frank's brother is goofy looking.
Yeah,
Frank is even goofier looking.
Yeah, his eyes are a little too wide or something.
Yeah, just strange facial structures.
I think a lot of it's just they're probably English actors. English actors look a little weirder.
Wow, sorry, Ross and Kitty.
I'm sorry. Honestly.
All of our other... We have a decent amount of British patrons, actually.
Well, I mean, the U.S. has Hollywood, and we get to set the standard for what looks normal.
Yeah, this was all shot in England, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt very English.
See, it felt like Detroit to me. It felt Rust
Belt. In terms of like the actors, I could tell all of those actors were English.
Yeah.
Doing American accents.
The sets felt like a Rust Belt sort of house to me. It felt like turn of the century Rust Belt.
I mean, it is set in the US.
It's set in the US, yes, but it's all shot in England.
Yeah, even the movers look a little weird, which had the best moment in this movie, which was...
Is that your daughter?
Uh-huh.
Got her mother's looks?
Her mother's dead.
Oh. Oh.
Just the immediate. No pause whatsoever.
Is that your daughter?
Uh-huh.
Got her mother's looks?
Her mother's dead.
Her mother's dead. You son of a bitch. Obviously, this comment has happened before, too.
Yeah.
To
him. Yeah, and then it tells, like, the backstory of Frank and Julia. It's, like, on their wedding day, and Frank's like, yeah, we're gonna fuck.
Get ready, bitch.
And
she's
like,
oh, okay.
I mean, he's just like, she opens the door, and he's in the rain, you know. Here's this man, tall, dark, and sadist, and she just can't resist.
Yeah.
Moving on.
See you later, buddy.
So, yeah, and the way he pursues her, the scene where he first seduces her, he just goes on and, like, sticks his finger right in her mouth.
Yeah.
As a first move.
It seems forward.
Does anyone do that? Has that worked for anyone? And you're like, all right, I'm going to really seduce this girl. And you're just like...
Just what are you doing? I mean, you know, this is the difference between
especially with those dirty nails. God damn.
This is the difference between alphas and simps. You know? I mean I wouldn't think to do this sort of alpha move of like cramming my finger in someone's mouth. But I bet it works out 40% of the time.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of, as we said, this movie is definitely about sex and pain and like pretty much rapey intentions from Frank.
Yeah,
like,
he's really fully rapey.
And there's even insinuations that like he molested Christy. That's what I got. I don't know if it explicitly says it, but
it
feels like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, as soon as Christy sees him, she's like, whoa, I thought I was done with having to deal with you.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it does feel like there's a past there that is gross.
Yeah. And the Julia's husband, Frank's brother, he's like, if you're watching like a cuckold porn, like he is the husband. It's like,
oh, yeah.
What's going on here?
Oh, my brother having sex with my new wife.
Oh,
great.
Julia, why? And he scrapes his hand on a nail and he's like, oh no, my hand. Like he
scraped the fuck out of his hand.
He needed stitches from scraping on a nail, but still, like, he's like, I can't look at it. I can't look at the blood.
There
Julia.
Was a lot of blood coming out of him.
Yeah.
I'm actually that, that same way to an extent with my own injuries.
Would you run to your wife though and be like, eh?
No. Well, I guess it depends. Yeah. I mean, yeah. If
I, like, I guess I'm. Yeah.
With my own injuries,
I would grab it and put like pressure on it.
Yeah.
And then take it from there.
Well, with my own injuries, I can psych myself out.
Right.
It's like, for example, I'm fine getting my blood drawn, but if I look at the blood rocketing out of my arm, I'm like, whoa, like that does not sit well with me.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think that'd sit well with anyone.
It makes me feel very faint.
Mm. That's understandable.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when they put the tap into your vein, I mean, your blood pressure is impressive to witness shooting out of your arm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So he's like bleeding all over the place. Julia's up in the attic where Frank did his business and got taken by the Cenobites. And then as like it looks at the blood on the floor and it's like slurped up by the floorboards.
Yeah.
And it goes underneath and you see like a preliminary heart.
Yeah.
Start forming.
Not just a heart, but kind of like the house.
Yeah.
It is housing Frank's organs and they're like being reinvigorated by this blood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then that blood really gets him about like 30% of the way from being resurrected. And like the first scene where he comes out of the floorboards is so effective. It's so gross.
Yeah. That's the most impressive part of the whole movie to me is this scene where he's like Lazarus rising, kind of like just kind of forming out of nothing into like this wet goop into a skeleton, into like sinew, and then
I mean it's 80s gloopy special effects at its best.
Yeah, it's more gloopy than any alien movie I've
right,
seen. It's
right,
full gloop.
Yeah, you never go full gloop. Well, in this case you do.
I mean, I guess I'm a pretty sick guy.
Yeah, it seems like the lion's share was of reconstitution was from his brother's, like
45 drops of blood.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it takes, like, for the rest of the movie, like, four or five victims.
Here's a
fully sucking the life out of them to get, like, to...
Yeah, here's a full rest. Person. Well, that'll get me about 10% of the way, so you're going to need to keep them bodies coming, baby. Yeah, it seems like he doesn't try as hard to make as much of each successive body.
Right.
It's like, okay, well, I'm going to leave all this gross stuff because there's poop in there or something.
Right, right. So he recruits Julia to go and find... rubes at the local bars to bring back to her house to have sex with. And the first one, I mean, they're creepy guys, but they're like, yeah, I'll have an affair with some attractive woman.
It's pretty thick.
I was just going to talk about the goopy sounds. as Frank's walking over the floorboards, it sounds like... All right. And, you know, just everyone, almost everyone except Tracy. Was it Tracy? Everyone except the girl is like a real creep.
Christy?
Christy.
Yeah.
It's a real, real creep. And maybe Julia's husband. But like all the guys that she brings in.
Yeah.
Is like,
well,
even her husband's like, do you want a cookie, little girl?
Yeah. Like,
Jesus.
Good Lord. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if this is the way Clive would want me to feel about him necessarily, but I do. Cause for this to be your, it's just, I don't look at the world through this filter, you know, and for somebody to be able to look at the world through this filter, some shit must have had to happen. And I just feel sorry.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, God, it's nasty.
I don't know. It's, yeah, it's weird what, yeah. Again, if you're into S&M, let us know what got you there. Cause I don't get it.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's one of these things where a lot of times people can't see the forest from the trees, you know, it's right. Like, I just like this stuff. It's like, well, were you ever abused? No. Okay. Well, I mean, did your dad rape you? Oh, yeah, numerous times.
I mean, only from ages like 8 to 10.
It wasn't
that
a
was
big
really
deal.
His range.
You're making a big deal out of this.
It was forever ago.
It wasn't my dad. It was my brother. Come on.
There's a lot of like real surreal imagery throughout this, especially with Christy. Lots of weird nightmares and dreams and shots of like blood going through walls and stuff like that. And then she runs into like Christy really doesn't have anything to do for most of the movie. She's just
except
there
kind of look shocked or look pretty or
to show weird, surreal things to.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other example is that there's this weird bum that's gross. That's like eating crickets and stuff.
Yeah. What's the deal with that bum?
Yeah. There's like no real payoff. Only at the very, very end of the film.
Quite a payoff, actually.
The bum turns into a pterodactyl.
A bone, like a bone dragon.
A bone dragon takes the cube and leaves.
Yeah. I feel like the bum is almost like the observer from Marvel, you know,
sure.
Like he shows up when the cube's about and he watches what goes on and then he makes sure the cube gets back to the old cube purveyor.
Car has been crushed into a cube. Please pick up your cube.
Right.
Watching Julia recruit men to get murdered just makes me think it's a real good thing there's not more women serial killers.
Oh, man.
Like, the human race would be in danger if there was like as many women serial killers as men serial killers, just because it's just like shooting fish in a barrel. It's like walk up to, especially if they're reasonably attractive.
Would you like to have sex?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Yes, I would. Okay. Come with me. Come with me into my brown panel van.
Yeah.
This sounds right.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Yep.
Whatever you need. There. Yeah. Actually, so did you know Netflix just released a new season of Unsolved Mysteries?
Yeah, I started watching them. It's not the same. It is not Unsolved Mysteries. It feels like
some of them are pretty good. The others are hit or miss.
See, the thing about I loved Unsolved Mysteries as a kid.
I know you did.
I loved that show. And like, I know, like, reboots, you know, people look down on them and whatever, but there's some stuff that if you're going to reboot a show, bring over the stuff that worked. Like, number one, you need a host. You need a narrator for it. Because Robert Stack was like, that's like 50% of Unsolved Mysteries for me. And then the other thing is, like, you need more segments. You got to... It feels like the Netflix's Unsolved Mysteries is Netflix's abandoned documentaries.
I found a lot of them to be compelling. And in particular, the last one is specifically about a woman who does this. Who's like,
okay,
you want to hop in my van? The guy's like, fuck yeah, I do. And then the next day she's like, hey, you want to hop in my van? And the next guy's like, yeah, fuck yeah, I do.
Yeah, I watched.
I like to see the arms.
Bryce just likes to see the arms.
I watched the first one. I don't even remember what it's about. Oh, it's the guy that fell down and went through a hole.
You got to watch the second one. You really do.
Okay. And then I skipped to the aristocrat family, which was like.
I missed some of them.
Definitely.
There's only six episodes.
Yeah. It was definitely a solved mystery.
Like, yeah, there's some of them that are foregone conclusion mysteries. Yeah.
This entire family died except for the husband, and the husband isn't anywhere to be found.
Right.
It's like, oh, the husband killed them all.
Foregone conclusion mysteries.
Like, yeah. So, yeah, it doesn't work as much. I mean, I'm going to watch all the episodes, of course. Like, I get it. But it really feels like Netflix found a story, like Making a Murderer story or like Tiger King story, where they're like, this is really interesting. Let's delve deep into this. Let's go like full serial podcast on this and discover the evidence that no one else has discovered and really dig deep. And they couldn't find anything else.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's still a complete mystery and there's nothing we can do about
it. I'll give you some pot.
So they compiled all of those abandoned documentaries and said, Unsolved Mysteries. Let's get the theme music and just tack it on there.
I'll give you some pot. Carrie and I get a little high and then we watch this.
All right.
And it's very
Very compelling.
Very
if you're
compelling.
High.
not necessarily compelling, but it's fun to have fun with it. You know?
Right. Right.
And, but you always got to. There, some of them get pretty gross and dark, and so you kind of got to wash it down with something light.
The first one is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like just a guy falls through the roof of a. Through some room in a hotel, and he can't even really figure out what angle he came from.
Yeah, like, and not, then he almost as if he was dropped from the sky
right.
through a very thick roof.
Right,
and then his belongings are like carefully laid out on top of the roof next to the outline of his body with his hands. You know, like Looney Tunes. Yeah,
just a goofy
right. Yeah,
impression.
And his phone's like carefully laid out there, and his wallet's there, and it's like, yeah. Well, that's not how this happened for sure. How this guy fucking fall directly through from the sky into the roof?
You know, I didn't even think about it. But what if it was a helicopter?
That's what I thought of over and over again. But really, the most anyway, Hellraiser.
They're probably like trying to make it look like he jumped from the roof of the Belvedere. And they push him out of a helicopter, but they like couldn't get it quite right. They should have gotten it closer.
I think he jumped from the Belvedere. I think there's a little
cap. that
they were
ledge.
Like, it'd be too hard to run. It's like, no, it wouldn't. What are you talking about? I could run down that. If the end goal was dying on the roof below, I could fucking do that.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff makes it. Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, Hellraiser. I like that Frank, after he's reconstituted, he's kind of vain enough that he starts wearing suits.
Yeah. He's like, don't look at me. Don't look at me!
And then he starts wearing suits.
Yeah.
I can't tell if it's vanity or modesty.
It's not modesty, because that man lived like a bum.
Right.
Like a dirty old bum. And then I was about to punch him, because he was a dirty old bum.
So Christy eventually gets the cube, and she gets shocked by the lightning sperms that come out of the cube.
Oh.
And she gets obsessed with it, opens it up, and she's at a hospital, and all of a sudden the walls open up, and there's a crazy-looking monster that very much like a monster from The Thing.
Yeah, I love this monster. It's
just really disturbing. It's like, Jesus.
Yeah, it's all upside down, and it kind of defies the laws of gravity because it runs on the wall.
Yeah, it's got like a scorpion tail, but it's like a tooth.
It's like, ah, rah, rah,
rah. Sabrina, don't just stare at it. Eat it.
It really wants to eat him.
In terms of like the surreal imagery and stuff, I don't think there's enough of that in modern horror.
No. Like, you're absolutely right. You know,
just the disturbing, like the Willy Wonka effect, like when they're on the boat.
Right. Why
it's just
is
like,
the iguana there?
Why is there a random decomposing thing? It's like, it's just color. It's just this surreal imagery. And it really,
it's a motherfucking montage.
Adds to the mood of the movie.
You know, you know, the one recent movie that we watched that actually comes through on that shit is The Evil Within.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
If you guys want to watch a movie that really fucking, I mean, it swings for the fences on the fucking weird imagery, watch The Evil Within. We reviewed it. It was one of the first movies we reviewed. So check that out, because it's not a bad movie. It's not a good movie. It's just a very interesting movie.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting movie. So Christy kind of figures out what's going on. She gets approached. She gets almost taken by the Cenobites. And then she's like, hey, remember my Uncle Frank? He's back here now. You want him?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. And then she goes there, and Frank is taking her dad's skin and put it on. There's a big switcheroo. And then,
So he looks like her dad now.
Yeah. And then he goes, Frank in, the skin suit, in the Egger suit, whatever his name is. What's his name? The father's name is Larry. Frank in the Larry suit goes to stab Christy, and then she jukes him.
Perry.
And he ends up stabbing Julia, and he's like, all right.
Yeah, that'll do.
Just not even an oops. And like, okay, well, I guess I'll kill her then.
Yeah.
Like, nothing personal. It's like, this was all personal.
Yeah.
Like, what? What?
You made it, and you did this. You made it personal.
I mean, this guy was a real jerk.
Sure was.
And then, eventually the Cenobites are summoned, and they take Frank, and he's got all the hooks in him. This is another iconic scene.
So this whole time, Frank has been trying to evade the Cenobites, because he knows that he's pulled one over on them, right? Mm-hmm. So he's like, look, we got to get out of here before the Cenobites realize that I'm back, because if they realize that I basically escaped them, then they'll want to get me back and, you know, bring me back. And so that's how Christy, in a back alley deal with the Cenobites, mm-hmm. approaches them and is like, hey, you don't want to kill me because I know where Frank is. And they're like, Frank, we killed Frank. That's impossible. And she's like, no, Frank's alive and reconstituting himself. So don't kill me. And I'll show you where he is. And they're like, we'll put a pin in killing you.
Pinhead says, we'll put a pin in you.
Got him. But we definitely want to see where this Frank is. So, like, but do be aware. You're not necessarily safe.
Yeah. So Frank gets caught and he gets, like, all the chains with the hooks on the end of them. Like, this is another, like, really effective scene of just being stretched by these hooks. And then this is a really iconic line, but I don't know why it just doesn't make sense to me. Cause Frank, like, looks at Christy and his, like, skin is stretching apart. He's about to explode from the pressure of these hooks. And he goes, Jesus wept.
Yeah.
And it's like, it sounds like a badass cool line, but to me, it doesn't make any sense. So I'm like, it just made me confused.
So I really love the line.
Yeah.
And I like the way it's used. And I think it's meant to mock God, because for a number of reasons, right? So it describes a moment when God was sad, mm-hmm. basically. It's also the shortest verse in the Bible, mm-hmm. right? And then it's like, oh, look at the power that I have. I can quote the Bible, even though I'm, you know, I don't know. It's kind of a spitting in the face of God line, in my opinion.
Yeah, I still don't see it. I don't know. That's just a personal thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, you'd have to listen to a lot more metal to really be able to.
I guess so.
Yeah, to really be able to get this.
Is this a metal thing?
Yeah. Yes.
So anyways, then the Cenobites come after Christy, and she rubs the box's nipple until it comes, and then they leave. The little lightning things that come out of them definitely look like lightning sperm. Am I wrong?
No. Yeah, they do. Yeah. They're like, they're like the Flash's sperm.
Right.
Yeah. They're really fast.
And then they chuck the box into like a...
Or Electro.
Some burning rubble that is out there for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did the house explode?
Yeah.
Or is there just like some...
Frank's explosion may have lit everything.
I don't know. There's just some random piles of trash that were on fire. Which, yeah, to your point, does feel like Detroit. Yeah. they throw the box into the fire, and then the hobo comes out, turns into a dragon, grabs it, and flies away.
I'm fucking dead.
Yeah, the end.
The end. Very similar ending to Candyman. Bunch of shit that was on fire.
Yeah, bunch of shit on fire. That's right.
You know, and then she gets really burned. And she gives the lady her baby back, and
yeah,
I want my baby back.
So, final recommendations. Who would like this?
Who would like this?
I think if you're really into 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Like, goopy, gloopy special effects. Like, this is a must-see.
Like we said earlier, it really defies the norm in terms of the story and the way it's all supposed to pan out. Like I said, you see the box and you go, oh, that guy chases and kills a bunch of people with hooks.
Yeah.
But it's not that.
If you like the kind of religion-based horror,
mm-hmm.
like exorcism stuff, this is a, definitely another side of the cube of that subgenre.
really barely has anything to do with like religion, but it, other than the concept of hell and pain and torment,
right,
for eternity.
And but there's an added element of mystery to the whole thing, which is the Cenobites are very intriguing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, where did they come from? Who are they working for? The devil?
Yeah.
Or their angels?
Yeah.
Or, and so it sets up kind of this sci-fi sort of intrigue where it's like, and there is a long and very detailed and overly detailed explanation to all that in the following movies that are descendingly good. Except for Hellbound. The second one is pretty... as legit.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So that is the perfect transition into our new game that will probably be played once, called Hellraiser versus Hellraiser. Hellraiser versus Hellraiser looks at the Rotten Tomato scores of movies.
Mm-hmm.
And we pit two movies against each other. You have to pick which one has a higher Rotten Tomatoes
this
score.
Is not at all like any game we've ever played.
Hellraiser versus Hellraiser pits one of the Hellraiser franchise movies against a movie about a child that's really rambunctious.
Oh,
like
okay.
Like a Hellraiser. You're like, ah, that kid's a real Hellraiser.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay, I got you.
It's a stretch. Okay, so first, so we've got five. First pairing is Problem Child, starring John Ritter.
Oh, okay. Oh,
versus Hellraiser.
Problem Child.
This movie.
Problem Child was kind of a horror movie in and of itself, wasn't it? Like a light? No,
you're thinking of The Good Son with Macaulay Culkin.
No, I'm not. Because I remember, well, maybe I was just so young when I saw Problem Child that there was a scene in it that fucked me.
I mean, with if you're a parent, it's kind of a horror movie because it is like the worst case scenario of child. It has Gilbert Godfrey in it.
Rest in rip.
Yeah, rip. Rest in rip.
Gilbert Godfrey is the king of comedy, man. Have you watched any of his stand-up? It is murderously inappropriate.
Right. Yeah.
Anywho, okay, so which one has a higher score? Which Hellraiser are we pitting?
This one.
This one.
The original.
Okay, so that tells me that Problem Child did at least decently, but I can't imagine Problem Child having a better score than Hellraiser, just because, I mean, like you said, there is an argument to be made that Hellraiser is iconic enough to be a 10 out of 10. We still talk about Hellraiser. I haven't heard Problem Child since, since it messed me up as a little kid. So I'm going to go Hellraiser.
Okay. You are correct. Next pairing, Problem Child 2 versus Hellraiser Hellseeker.
Which one is that?
It was made in 2002.
Hellseeker. Problem Child 2, which is probably very bad, versus...
I forgot to tell you this, the Rotten Tomatoes for the previous one. So Problem Child had a Rotten Tomatoes score of 0.
Oh my god!
Hellraiser had a score of 71.
Wow-wee! Yeah. Okay.
So Problem Child 2 versus Hellraiser Hellseeker.
You gotta be able to do better than 0, at least for Problem Child 2. But I do know that the Hellraisers really go into the bad territory later on. And 2002 that's definitely on the stanky side of fresh. So I'm going to say Problem Child 2.
Wow, you got that one too. You are correct.
What's their score?
Problem Child 2 has a score of 7%. And Hellraiser Hellseeker has a score of 0.
Wow. Wee.
Just really spans the spectrum. All right. Next up is Dennis the Menace from 1993, starring Walter Matthau.
Yeah.
Versus Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth.
Okay, this is where the Hellraiser series started going downhill, but I can't imagine it being worse than a Dennis the Menace movie. But Dennis the Menace movies, Or
there's not as many as of them as I thought.
No, I think it's this one and maybe one other.
Mm-hmm.
That is obviously meant for, that is a family fair, kids movie kind of thing, right up against the Little Rascals
mm-hmm.
from our childhood. I'm going to say Dennis the Menace probably did better than Hellraiser 3.
Okay. You are wrong.
Oh.
Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth, got 41%.
Wow.
And Dennis the Menace got
27%. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty rough. All right, next we got Curly Sue.
What? Did you know about this, or did you find this on a list?
You've never heard Curly Sue?
Have you?
It's with Jim Belushi and a precocious little girl.
I really despise Jim Belushi. I think he's a bad actor.
I kind of like Jim Belushi in some stuff.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, he's like mostly going on for low effort sitcoms but
there's no reason for him to be an actor.
I don't know. Agree to disagree.
Okay.
He's all right. I mean, there's much worse than Jim Belushi.
Who's the guy who plays Paul Blart?
Kevin James.
Kevin James exists. Therefore, Jim Belushi doesn't need to.
Well, yeah, he didn't exist back in the 80s, though.
Jim Belushi was acting in the 80s?
Yeah, that was like his heyday.
Oh, really?
Like 80s and 90s. Yeah.
Right after his riding the coattails of his poor brother.
Whatever. So Curly
Chris
Sue.
Chris Farley exists there.
Curly Sue versus. Well, I mean, Jim Belushi wasn't a physical comedian.
Okay, fine. Have it your way.
We're going to have to do a retrospective on the Jim Belushi career, and then I will change your opinion. I don't know, probably two of his movies. I don't know. I can't even remember. I can't actually defend my position, but I don't have a bad opinion about Jim Belushi. He's all right. He's like a just middle of the road utility.
I'm becoming very irritated.
Guy. All right. So Curly Sue versus Hellraiser Hellworld.
Do you know which one that
I
is?
I can't remember. When did it come out? I didn't write down the year.
Well, good are you.
It's in the middle.
Hellworld. I'm going to say the Jim Belushi one.
You are wrong.
What?
Curly Sue got 13% and Hellraiser Hellworld got 20.
Big difference.
Pretty close.
Man.
All right. Finally, this will determine whether you win or not. This is a tiebreaker. The Good Son, starring Macaulay Culkin and Elijah Wood.
A legitimately good movie.
Versus Hellraiser Judgment, which was released a couple years ago, 2018.
Yeah. I mean, when I say legitimately good, I mean above a five. You know, it's probably sitting around a six or a seven. But that's definitely doing a lot better than the Hellraiser movie. Definitely.
Final answer?
Yeah, final answer.
You are wrong.
No way.
Yeah.
What?
The Good Son got 26 versus Hellraiser Judgment got 50.
What?
I know, right? I love The Good Son. I might have to watch that again because maybe it's like...
I watched it last year. It was great.
Yeah. I thought it was like really highly disturbing.
You can't beat Macaulay Culkin and Elijah Wood.
Well, I probably could. They're weaklings. especially at that age.
Come to Daddy is a pretty disturbing horror movie starring Elijah Wood that came out last year.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out. All right. So that was Hellraiser versus Hellraiser. You lost. Let's move on to It Came From Social Media.
Yes, it came
from social media
to fill the world with terror, to bring you unforgettable suspense. What was it? Where did it come from? Who were the all-powerful creatures it brought
from social media?
And what did they want on Earth?
Came from social media is just a bit where we read comments and questions from our social media feeds. Yeah. There's so many now that it's hard to, like, we could talk for like an hour probably from what we've gotten from the last week.
Listen,
a lot of communication. We love talking to all of you. Sorry if we don't include you on this week's It Came From Social Media, but Lots of good conversations.
If you would like to help us out, the other way to do it would just be to like us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever, mm-hmm. because those numbers are important to us too. And it's important for us to be able to reach out to you and talk to you. And, you know, and that is something that we will do. And we'll talk horror movies with you. We'll also talk disgusting, disturbing bullshit with you.
Like yeah.
Dick monsters and all sorts of all sorts of weird shit. So. Yeah, we'll talk Drain Addict and Ratty and mm-hmm. all kinds of stuff. So do like us on Facebook and all where or wherever you social.
So one common theme this week of social media posts is since we've launched our shop with all our stickers, people are receiving them and they're posting on social media that they got their sticker pack
yeah.
And a note from HMT. And so those people are, there might be more, but I know Sarah, Eric, Ross, Heather, and Kylie Bean, all posted in Facebook or Twitter or Instagram
yeah.
about receiving them. So thank you so much. Also another cool photo that you can check out on Facebook is, listener Wendelin's son. No, Wendelin made this for her son,
yeah.
which was a crocheted alien.
Yeah, a xenomorph. It's
yeah.
it's great.
It's adorable.
Yeah, I can't believe how the fine stitching on the on the alien is. And yeah, I'd like one of those.
Yeah,
like you set up a sweatshop. You produce those little knitted aliens. Mm-hmm. We'll sell them for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll give you a cut, like we give Dustin a cut.
Mm-hmm. And then the other real long conversation that we've been having a kick out of and that you alluded to is from Penis Monsters to Drain Addict to, yeah. I even got into E-Fucked a little bit.
Ah, the French.
Do you ever go on E-Fucked?
No.
Really?
Yeah, no.
Oh, man. That is like a it's real guilty pleasure. Is porn bloopers.
Okay.
I mean, come on. You listen to Your Mom's House. It's basically that.
It's fine. Realm. I just like the commentary with it. You know, it's like, and you know, there's a specific jerk off mood.
There is
where I'll be like, I just want some real experience.
Right. You know? But I mean, there is a little commentary. It's kind of funny.
Okay. I'm not judging. I'm just saying I don't. I didn't even really know it existed.
Okay. Well, now you're in luck. I'm sorry to bring that into light. Anyways, GlitterCore55 on Instagram asked us what our favorite non-horror movies were. Go, no limit, no judgment. It's so hard to answer because there's so many and it's like,
yeah,
I don't.
So many.
That I like, that it's not, but it's not like I rewatch them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some that are just like, I don't know. And I didn't even like think of like 80s stuff where it's like, well, of course, like Back to the Future and Ghostbusters and all that stuff. Mm. Like, but it's so much like in the ether that it's not even worth including. For me, I put Requiem for a Dream. That's like been my top most favorite for a long time. Lion, which is more recent. Fight Club, Magnolia, There Will Be Blood, The Kill Bills, Schindler's List, Eternal Sunshine of Spotless Mind, Being John Malkovich. But really, anything by Tarantino, Paul Thomas Anderson, during and before There Will Be Blood, or Darren Aronofsky, or Senior Spielbergo.
Yeah, Steven Spielberg's Mexican counterpart.
Yeah, and Big Lebowski.
Yeah, my taste is very similar. The only one that I really forgot that you had was Being John Malkovich. I really like that movie a lot. And a lot of my favorite movies have John Malkovich in them. So
like the Three Musketeers.
Yeah. Mine,
The Man in the Iron Mask.
Mine were There Will Be Blood, No Country for Old Men, Burn After Reading, which has Malkovich, The Big Lebowski, Black Swan, which could be argued is horror. Dumb and Dumber, Lord of the Rings, Return of the Jedi. I like Return a lot.
Yeah. I didn't even include Star Wars or like any of that stuff because I was like, hey, that's just a given.
Fargo, Saving Private Ryan, Jurassic Park, Terminator 2 is a big one, and obviously Predator. Predator is Oh, man, what a fabulous movie Predator is. Yeah. And that's another one like Hellraiser that kind of breaks a lot of the mold of what you think it's supposed to be. And then Lion. Yeah, Lion as well.
Yeah, I can't think of a movie that affected has a me. Bigger emotional reaction.
Yeah, I like movies that devastate me.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You kneel for no one.
I am no man. I cry every time.
So there's a lot more. Sorry if we didn't get to you, but we do have to wrap up the episode. Kind of a time crunch on this one. Thanks to everyone that's a patron. You're really helping us out. Thanks to anyone that ordered stickers off of our new shop. And please share the podcast with a friend if you like it. Check out our website for links to ways you can support us, even low effort ways that you're probably going to do anyways, like shop on Amazon. Just click through the button in the banner on our website, and that helps us out. And that's it. Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys. We love you. See you next week. Bye.
In today's enlightened society, there remains a stigma to being a psychosexual sadist.